Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Been to the mountaintop. April 3rd, 1968. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered one of his most famous and, as it works out, his last public address, public speech. And as per usual, it was extraordinary. It was moving. It was one of a kind, as they all were. We've got some difficult days ahead, he told an overflowing crowd in Memphis, Tennessee, where the city's sanitation workers were striking. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we, as a people, will get to the promised land. Less than 24 hours after those prophetic words, King was assassinated by James Earl Ray. He had been to Memphis 2 times before to help with the Memphis sanitation workers' strike. On the 18th of March, he spoke at a rally before 15,000 people and vowed to return the following week. And James Lawson and King led a march on the 28th, which erupted in violence and was immediately called off. But against the advice of some folks, he returned to Memphis on the 3rd, seeking to restore nonviolence back to the movement. So, after arriving in Memphis, he was exhausted. He had developed a sore throat and a fever, and he asked Ralph Abernathy to take his place at that night's scheduled mass at Bishop Charles Mason Temple. As Abernathy took the podium, he could sense the disappointment of the crowd, which had turned out in hundreds to hear King speak. Abernathy called King at the hotel and convinced him to brave the bad weather and come down. When King arrived, the crowd gave him a standing ovation. After Abernathy introduced King, the 39-year-old leader took the podium and began to speak to the audience extemporaneously. Something is happening in Memphis. Something is happening in our world. Surveying great times in history, including Egypt and the Roman Empire, the Renaissance, and the Civil War, King said he would be happy if God allowed him to live just a few years in the second half of the 20th century. As King recalled the events in Birmingham, he painted a bleak picture of the times, yet said this was the best time in which to live. As he concluded his speech, he began to reminisce about his near-fatal stabbing in September of 58. He exclaimed that he would have missed the emergence of the student sit-ins in 1960, the freedom riots in 61, the Albany movement in 62, the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom in 63, and the Selma to Montgomery March in 65. In a prophetic finale to his speech, King revealed that he was not afraid to die. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. Witnesses, including Abernathy, Andrew Young, and James Jordan, said King had tears in his eyes as he took his seat. This time it just seemed like he was just saying goodbye. I hate to leave, Jordan supposed. On April 4th, while King waited for a limousine to take him to dinner at Reverend Billy Kyle's home, he was fatally shot on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel. MLK believed in driving change through economic power and equality. It was essential to achieving true social and racial justice. Economic equality, King believed, fueled racial injustice. He believed that racism and economic oppression were deeply interconnected. African Americans were often trapped in low-paying jobs, faced discriminatory hiring practices, and were denied economic opportunities, perpetuating systemic inequality. So he thought that by addressing economic inequality, the movement could tackle one of the root causes of racial injustice. He felt that economic pressure could also influence systems of power. So he viewed economic boycotts and collective actions as extraordinary ways, wonderful tools to be able to drive social change. And I think that that's borne out across different movements, across different countries, across different cultures, and across different time periods. The success of the Montgomery bus boycott demonstrated how withholding economic participation could force systemic reforms. He believed that economic empowerment created independence. He advocated for economic empowerment through collective ownership, unionization, and black-owned businesses. Economic justice was part of a broader human rights issue for him. So he viewed economic justice as inseparable from civil rights. He saw poverty as a universal issue that disproportionately affected marginalized groups, including African Americans. He believed in nonviolent resistance and economic strategies like boycotts and strikes because they aligned with that philosophy. By focusing on economic change, he thought and he worked to disrupt systems of oppression, uplift marginalized communities, create a foundation for lasting equality. So the unions, you think about trying to make change. Think about what it takes to make real change, real sustainable change. And I think that, well, I don't know. I'm not sure what your impression of King's work is. We're all familiar with I Have a Dream. We're all familiar with the content of one's character, not the color of their skin. But I just don't know if we all appreciate and recognize how prescient, how wise, how forward-thinking, how dynamic and strategic his thinking was and his approach. The nonviolent, the economic incentives or the economic work that he did, from my perspective, is 1,000% spot on. When you can hit somebody in their pocketbook versus, this is going to sound really stupid, when you hit somebody in their pocketbook versus hitting somebody in the face, the pocketbook, yeah, it hurts to get hit in the face, but the pocketbook thing, whoo, buddy, that really stings. And so there are multifaceted approach to this that he advocated for. Number one were boycotts, which have been highly effective throughout history. They're highly effective today. And then through collective efforts like unionization, he believed that it was a wonderful tool of economic empowerment. And he strongly supported labor unions because he saw them as a critical tool for achieving economic justice, improving workers' rights, and fighting through systematic inequality. So you break it down, you look at it's economic justice and fair wages. And that's what unions do, is they negotiate on the behalf of the members for fair wages, benefits, and safe working conditions. And that, of course, directly aligns with his belief that workers deserve dignity and equitable compensation. So he was in Memphis delivering this speech because of the sanitation workers' strike. And it's emblematic of the fair treatment of low-income workers, and particularly African-American workers. The power of collective action and unions embody the principle by uniting workers to advocate for their shared interests. It's solidarity. You can challenge exploitative practices and then create systemic change. One person has a hard time doing that. But when you can bring together thousands, then it's extremely powerful. Really, 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 really hard. And we're still seeing whether you care for unions or not. I mean, that is a third rail. That is a live wire word right there. Like Trump, you're going to get some kind of a reaction, union, whatever. You get the idea. But for King, they were a way to counter economic exploitation. So he called for unions to be inclusive, advocating for interracial solidarity among workers to break down racial divisions and focus on shared economic goals. I mean, he knew, as I know, and I bet you know, that we're all way more similar than we are different. And just because somebody has a different color, just because their skin is a slightly different pigment than mine, or somebody's skin is a different pigment from yours, doesn't mean that we're different people. Very well, maybe. But I bet we have a lot of the same desires. We all have universal needs which must be met. And we will make our own personalized decisions on how we meet those universal needs. That being said, when we're able to come together regardless of what our skin color is, because we have shared values and shared desires and shared wants, we recognize that we have common desires for meeting needs in a common way. And one of those is we want better working conditions. We need to be paid more for the work that we're doing. We deserve and demand dignity for the work that we're doing. He believed that that we could also strengthen democracy this way. He saw unions as an essential way to a healthy democracy. He believed that when workers had a voice through unions, they could participate more fully in shaping economic and political policies as well. And today, obviously, we see teachers' unions as some of the most powerful forces in politics. So,
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
King saw this very, 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 very clearly. And so then you align all those things with nonviolent resistance like boycotts and other forms of economic protests. You have the ability to strike as a union. And again, you're hitting people in their pocketbook. So many powerful things. He was working to change the world, certainly change the United States. And he did that. And he was trying to create a fairer economic system that valued all workers and their contributions, regardless of their race or their background. So I think that the idea of voting with your dollars is really, really, really powerful. And even it's overlooked so much still today, the way that we choose to allocate our dollars through our investments or through how we bank, through buying local versus buying nationally. All of these things, there's direct evidence and research that has been done that, which is pretty obvious, if you keep money in your local economy, it's going to benefit your local economy versus and you can look at this from a nationalistic standpoint. If we outsourced all of our manufacturing jobs to other countries, well, you're gutting the middle class. And we're sending all of our resources to other countries and helping them to develop robust middle classes as ours suffer. And it's true, obviously, at every different level, nationally, locally, so on and so forth. So voting with your dollars, I think, is a really, really powerful thing. King, I think he would have believed that making economic choices can be a moral act, and everything is a reflection of, we have the opportunity to allocate our resources in a way that is aligned with our values. And when we're not paying attention to that, we're not being mindful slash intentional with it, well, then we're missing the opportunity to do that. And like everything else, I'm not advocating that you're 100% perfect with every way that you're allocating your most valuable resources, time, attention, energy, and money. But if we can get to the point where we're doing it, where 80% of the allocation decisions of those resources is based on those things that are most important to us, like our values and our beliefs, and our just understanding what matters, and we line those up, I think that we really position ourselves for success. So I believe that the king saw that very, 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 very clearly. And again, whatever you're trying to change, and obviously King is working for civil rights, and he effectively was one of the most important figures in ever in the civil rights movement in the United States and around the world, but certainly understood that the means to that end, it's multifaceted, and the money piece of it, economic pressure, is a powerful tool for accomplishing that. It'll help to just do lots of really, really, really wonderful and virtuous things. So, and going back to these boycotts, we talked about the Montgomery bus boycott, the Delano grape boycott was organized by the United Farm Workers under Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta. And that was extremely profound. It's an anti-apartheid boycott that went on for many, many years, targeting South African goods to end apartheid. Countless. Recently, the Dakota Access Pipeline boycott, whether you agree with it or not, was extremely effective. And in just very recent memories, you've seen boycotts of brands like Bud Light, Budweiser, which was massively publicized and had a giant impact on a giant company's bottom line. So anyway, impossible to know what Martin Luther King would have to say about the state of America today. Impossible to know, obviously. Well, it doesn't mean we can't hypothesize and look at how he handled himself and the things that he believed and the things that he talked about. But just kind of a state of play. In 1968, the median household income for black families was approximately $28,000, and that's adjusted to current day dollars. Okay, so so that was a long time ago, 56 years ago. In today's dollars, the median household income for black families was $28,000. Today, it's risen to just under $57,000. So it's doubled. I don't know what we necessarily think about that, but it's improvement, certainly. Some more to break that down a little further. Among black U.S. households in 2022, 49% earned less than $50,000. 51% made $50,000 or more. A third of black households, 34%, earned $75,000 or more, and 22% earned $100,000 or more. Okay, so I'd certainly say that is progress. Certainly, education is and always has been one of the keys out of poverty. And in 1968. Approximately 3% of African Americans 25 years old and older had completed 4 years of college. So that's not surprising. 1968, 3% of African Americans 25 and older had completed 4 years of college. What about today? About a quarter, 26% of all blacks 25 and older have a bachelor's degree or more. Right? So that's a profound change as of 2022. Another third, 32% have completed some college without obtaining a bachelor's. So they've matriculated two, but not completed. I don't know if that's correct or not, but you get the idea. And roughly 4 in 10, 42%, have at most graduated from high school. So 42% have at least graduated high school or earned an equivalent like a GED. So those are pretty objective measures from an economic standpoint, because this has been a conversation for the most part about King's appreciation and genius in recognizing the power of using money and financial means to break out of poverty, to gain more rights, to just transcend horrible conditions. And by the way, this is true everywhere. This is true everywhere. Head on. A brilliant man on the podcast very recently, and he set up schools in India. He recognized that the only way to break the caste system for people at the bottom of the caste system was through education, through economic means. And so he is doing that and has enjoyed immense success. I believe his name was Abraham George. So if you're curious about that, it's an amazing story. Truly an amazing story. So much hard work. But that's what this takes. That's what this takes. So from an objective standpoint, in terms of education, in terms of just household finance in general, things are better. Still a long way to go, but that's how change happens. That's how progress happens. Is we want it all to happen a lot faster. So let's talk about some subjective things, if that's the correct term for this. But I think that this is where Dr. King would be very frustrated, as I am very frustrated by it. And this is just, I mean, these are pretty staggering statistics from my perspective, that between 2011 and 2019, the New York Times and the Washington Post increased their usage of the words racist, racists, and racism by over 700% and 1,000%, respectively. So prior to 2011, between 2011 and 2019, the two biggest publications in the world increased their use of racist, racists, and racism by 700% and 1,000%. Now, that's going to have an impact. It's going to have an impact. 2011, so before that happened, 35% of white liberals thought racism in the United States was a big problem. Okay, so in 2011, 35% of white liberals thought racism in the U.S. was a big problem. By 15, this figure had ballooned to 61%. And in 2017, it had gone up to 77%. So it had more than doubled. So the impact of the New York Times and the Washington Post talking about racism all the time makes these white liberals think that racism is a giant problem. Between 2013 and 2019, the New York Times and the Washington Post increased their terms, the use of the term systemic racism, structural racism, and institutional racism by roughly 1,000%. So there you go. Between 2013 and 2019, the New York Times and the Washington Post increased their usage of white privilege and racial privilege by 1,200% and 1,500%, respectively. So again, between 2013 and 19, the Times and the Post increased use white privilege, racial privilege, by 1,200% and 1,500%. So what does it say to you? What does that say to you? It says to me that objectively, things are better. Household incomes doubled. The amount of four-year degree people that blacks that are getting more highly educated has exploded, which is nothing but a really, really positive thing. This is not to say that more progress is not needed. My whole thing is constant progress. I'm trying to get better every day. So for sure, I think that that MLK would look around and would see those numbers and would be pleased with it. More work to be done. But then I think that he would be saddened by the national discourse being so perverse. I think that, those statistics are fairly perverse. But it's certainly a lot to chew on, and it is a lot to digest. And fundamentally, maybe it's hopeful, but I do not think that our country is as toxic and as racist as the New York Times, the Washington Post would have us believe. That's what I think. That is my honest belief. And it's my honest desire that we continue to get better. Martin Luther King went to the mountaintop. He saw the promised land. We should follow his example and seek that out ourselves. As always, do your part by doing your best.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.